Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get Shungite to the masses. You are entering the Shungite Zone. This is the Shungite Radio Show produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. And welcome to the Shungite Show. It's July 23rd, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Derek Condon, and Kevin Smith is with us. And we are going to have another reading Barbara Meneses doing a Shungite update. She's been talking to Shungite, and so we'll be doing that too. It's about 20 minutes. It'll be fun. Hi, guys.
Hello, hello.
Good morning.
So, Derek, when we were talking, well, Kevin, I'm so glad you're here. You see, what happens is that when we start just before the show, we talk to each other, and then I kind of, like, you know, forget that we haven't said, Kevin, the Renaissance man. I would just continue the conversation we were having. But Kevin is here because we love him and because we have so much fun when he's here. And
yay.
He always has stories, and he's the man that has been playing with and working with the black scrying mirrors. I don't know if we'll get into much on that. He's going to update. Well, actually, you could update us if you'd like on what you, because you've just done two new ones, correct?
I have. So I have a large bubble glass one. It is a 16-inch by 12-inch size mirror with that convex glass. And then I did a smaller one, not much smaller. It's about a 6 or 7 inch diameter circle. But I did it with that inverse, where it's the concave, that Kozarev style mirror. And the display, and I think I talked to you about this, Nancy. I showed you a picture of it that when I was putting the paint on, it was going and depositing the powder in my solution in a way that it makes it more visible on the mirror, on that surface. And so, you know, like, part of me was like, I kind of want the solid, like, smooth, sleek black. But then you and Derek were saying, hey, you know, that kind of looks good. And I was thinking, you know, like in regular crystal ball scrying, you don't have a perfectly clear crystal ball. You have all of the little inclusions and little geometric shapes that occur in that. And so I've done some scrying sessions with it, and it is actually very fantastic with that. It's a feature, not a bug.
That's a great way of putting it.
Now, because you were going to paint it and then make it smooth, so you didn't do that. You left it. So when you're looking into it now, you've got these little streaks and twirls of the Shungite powder on the surface of the mirror, actually, and. Are you finding that they are actually, when you're in there, does it give more depth to it? Is it more geometric? Is it, what's it doing that you're saying it's really magical?
It creates more density into the field of vision. So with, like, I've done other plain black mirrors before I was doing the Shungite mirrors. And when you do that with just straight black latex paint and nothing in it, you can get really vacuous, you know, the cosmic void kind of effect. And then the mind has to go and, you know, that's why you have to go and really work at it to go and build your visionary qualities of being able to go and extract data and images and sensations from that. With the black shungite with the slight visible swirls in it, it gives more contact points that you can think of. You're climbing, and you know, you could be climbing on a perfectly smooth wall, or you could be climbing going up a mountain where there's little handholds and crags and things that you can hold on to and get a good grip. This, with the visible shungite, it creates that handhold type sensation where you can, you have things to go and launch off of mentally. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I have to tell you, because I don't think I mentioned to the, I did explain it to someone on one of the shows, but I don't think you were there because you're only on this show, and I don't think it was this show. But I was over at the vet's office, and I was talking to some attendants that I've had, you know, a lot of interactions with over the years, and always had really good, you know, rapport with them. But we were talking about, because they know about shungite, they've got shungite, and I said, yeah, it was right after your last show, and I said, yeah, I've got this friend, Kevin, that comes on, and he talks about Black Mirror scrying. Well, one of these people just like, it was like I'd hit her in the head. You know, she suddenly became very alert. And I realized that she had come from the Dominican Republic.
And oh, yeah. I think you did talk about that the last time I was on.
Did I? I didn't remember. Yeah. But, so for people out there, excuse me, for people that are out there, this is not black magic. This is not ceremonial magic. This is magic, in that it is, magic is the manipulation of energy. And what, and correct me, Kevin, if I say anything wrong here, but basically what Kevin has got is a tool to focus his mind and his inner mind to allow an opening, a channeling, a connection to higher information. It's a tool. There's nothing magical about it in the concept of woo. This is magical because it's energy. You're working at the energy level, which is a neurology, a science. So I just wanted to explain to people that you are the Renaissance man, but you are not, you know, well, you are sort of an alchemist, probably. Alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really in any kind of way you want to view that, because some people are more mystically minded and some people are very secular minded, and whichever path of life and mindset you are going through, this still works. You can say that, oh, it's looking through portals and dimensions into other realms and all of that, or you can say, hey, it's the what I tell my clients, because I utilize the Black Mirror with my hypnotherapy, and it doesn't matter if you, quote, believe in it or not. I refer to it, for the more secular clients, I refer to it as the cinema of the subconscious. That is, it is a black screen. It's like going into a movie theater. You have it all dark, and you are projecting out from your mind. So really, you know, your mind is the antenna through which you are, you know, if you going with the enterology construct viewpoint, that your mind is an antenna that is going and projecting data through. And or you could say, oh, well, it's actually opening a wormhole. And, you know, it's like it works with really whatever your personal worldview is. And so it's not like, oh, now I'm exposing myself to outside forces, da-da-da. You know, it's like, One, a regular Black Mirror, I've never had any experiences of that. But also with, but then with the shungite, that really goes and attenuates, you know, as you well know, any of the influences coming from outside, or even if you're projecting out into the world, you know, some people, you know, who are more, you know, occult-minded are like, ooh, I'm going to use the black mirror to project some sort of hex on somebody. And if you were to try that with the Shungite, I just can't. Sorry, can't even.
It would just shut down.
It would. It would. You'd be left there with the true void of sitting there saying, hello, hello, go do the thing. Can anyone hear me? You know, it would be an exercise in futility.
Absolutely. Derek, you're silent. Are you doing things? I started to ask Derek because I forgot. You were telling me why you didn't get to bed early enough. You were up late because you were making a new beehive, right? And I never got the end of it. Did you get it made?
Oh, yeah. Actually, you may hear some clicking in the background, but that's finishing right now, so there's 2 hours left. It's about a 17-hour print job. But what we're talking about is we have a 3D printer that prints several materials, and in this case, we're printing a Langstroth beehive that looks just like a standard beehive you'll see in a field somewhere that are typically white, but in miniature scale, about 6 inches across. So it's sort of a little display model that'll be good for educational purposes. And we'll put little Shungite nuggets at the entrance, just like we do on the full-size ones, and show it. So that's what we're doing with that one. So, yeah, I was up till 2 or 3 in the morning just working out on the 3D graphics and whatnot. But that one looks good.
Now, is this a Shungited one? Or because is it going to be designed for the bees? Are you going to put bees in it, or is it just a display model of the hive itself?
This one's just going to be a display model. I'm not going to put any bees. Technically, we could, and you could have a small colony in there. They do sell them, so little, like, I don't know, maybe shoebox-sized beehives, you can say. But those fill up so quickly, because if you have a queen and they're actually laying eggs, she'll lay a couple thousand eggs a day. So those boxes don't really work out. Yeah, so those boxes don't work out well. So in our case, no, it's just for display. There'll be no bees in it. I have a few little plastic bee models I'll put around there. But the kids that come to the various shows and events we do just are really drawn to the bees, of course. So I'd like to get their hands on a small beehive and be able to explain it and maybe get some future beekeepers interested there and show them how it works. So that's kind of the plan. And then, again, we'll put the Shungite nuggets at the entrance. So it's kind of hands-on. Oh, so you actually put the nuggets there. Because that question comes up often. I'm like, oh, yeah, actual Shungite nuggets are placed at the entrance, and that's how it all started. Everything else came later, from adding Shungite powder to the paint to powder in little trays for expansion purposes. But yeah, it all began with the 3D nuggets, so it's good to show that.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Exactly. And then we're... And then Nancy, you initially mentioned too we're starting to the mason bee houses. So we actually have, now these are full size ones. We're 3D printing. So a mason bee is a solitary bee that doesn't sting or collect honey. So they're really good for those small backyards that maybe, you know, aren't set for a full size beehive or even a back patio in an apartment. So the little tiny beehives, about the size of an orange, little holes in it and tubes, and you just nail it similar to a fence post or railing or tree or whatnot, and mason bees will find it out.
We got to explain mason bees. I mean, we know what they are, and people that listen to us, we probably are on the verge of boring them about this different subjects. But the mason bee, explain it, because it's a singular bee. It doesn't sting you. You can put it real close to your house, or you can put it out by itself. But there's the little bee. Tell them what the little bee does. This one solitary little female bee. Yes, there's male bees out there, but all, you know what they do. And then, you know, they just live off the land. I don't know what the males do. But the little female, go tell them what she does, because to me the mason bee is just as magical as can be. And there's so many diverse versions of them, right? Depending on where they're living. Because down here, we have mason bees that are basically fluorescent green. I mean, they're black, but when, you know, the light hits them, you got this fluorescent green.
Yeah, no, that's, or blue sometimes, all sorts of colors. People sometimes think they're large flies. But if you see that bluish or green, like a rainbow, kind of looks like an abalone shell, sort of. But yeah, you see that on there. And those are the mason bees. And again, they don't sting. And then, so what she's talking about is the tubes. So often you'll see these mason bee houses at various co-ops or farmer stores. They look like bird houses with little tubes in them about the size of a pencil. And what the mason bee will do, and this is the female, she'll actually, and she's the solitary bee, so there's not a colony there. She's not laying thousands of eggs with worker bees or whatnot. She's going inside of this tube, again, the diameter of a pencil, and they're called mason bees because they take actual mud and pollen and other material and build a wall. So they'll go inside the tube, lay an egg for the next generation, and then actually build a mason wall.
When they lay the egg, they also lay like a blanket of pollen food, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when the egg comes to be a larva, there's food in there so that they can actually start eating even before they break their way through the wall to freedom.
Mm-hmm. And correct, yeah, and even there's even pollen in some of the wall, so there'll be a little extra nutrients there as they eat and chew their way through the wall. In essence, the queen bee will lay that egg, put a little bunch or bundle of pollen food mixture there for that bee when it emerges to eat. So it's got its own little room. The female mason bee will build the other wall, the second wall. So now it's in its chamber, lay another egg, build another wall, and continue this for as long as the tube is, and then move to the next tube. And then just continue the generations that way. And then over the coming months, they'll progress, and grow. And then the next spring, when the temperatures reach about 55 or 60 degrees, depending on your area, they'll actually emerge. And then you'll see the larva will then have developed by then and the small mason bees. And then they'll come out and emerge as the new generation. And then they'll go off on their own. And again, not stay together as honeybees will. They'll fly away. And they're actually 400 times better pollinators than honeybees. Mm-hmm. Because they're great to have out there. And again, they don't sting, so you don't have to worry about that part of it.
That confuses people. You know, how can it be more capable? All right. Because when the honeybee goes over to pick up the nectar, they're putting it in their little sacks on their legs and they're collecting it. And they want to maintain as much nectar, so they're not going to do what a mason bee does, which is to kamikaze, like just smash into the bee and throw all this pollen all over the place. Correct? Because the regular honeybee is trying to collect this to make honey and, you know, what is that, nectar bread stuff? And, you know, so, but the mason bee, that they don't care. They're just going in there and boom. And whatever gets on top of them, they fly back and use it as food, right?
That's it. Yeah, they don't do a whole lot of cleanup on site at the flowers as far as... So what the honeybees will do is get on the pollen, grab it, brush it down onto their back legs and make little sacks, as you may see, about the size of a grain of rice. The mason bees are, you know, a little more like me, haphazard, just run at it full blast and slam into the flower and it gets everywhere. So they're great pollinators every time they land on a flower. If they're touching the flower, they're going to pass some of that over and help with the pollination process. So they're really good at that, and they're quick. They'll do it in a matter of minutes too. And I don't remember the exact quote, but it's phenomenally faster than a honeybee. And the numbers. So just a couple bees, mason bees, will pollinate an entire fruit tree where it would take hundreds of honeybees. So that's one reason I encourage people to get the honeybee, and then mason bee as well, because they are small. So they're these beehives we're talking about, the Shungite mason beehives that we just made available on the cosmicreality.net store, are only about 2.5 inches across and then deep as well. So they're really small, low profile. And again, you can just put them anywhere in your garden or whatnot. And a way to encourage bees to come would be, and I'll put some of this in the product description, would be to make a small amount of clay, or usually clay is preferred, or mud near the beehive. And that way the bees don't have to travel so far for their masonry work. And then they'll go ahead and set up shop or home in the house and begin from there.
Now, are they I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kevin.
I was saying that, so like the return on investment then, I mean, aside from the honey aspect, which is the return on investment for honeybees, but as far as the pollinating, it's a much lower investment of getting the little mason bee houses, even if you get two or three of them, and the amount of pollinating that they can do, and the awesome benefit they do to the local ecosystem is just more so than if you're going just with honeybees. Then, yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be. Now, the only difference. So relative in pollination, yes, they do pollinate enormously larger amounts. Now there's a distance issue. So the mason bee will only go so many, and it differs per mason bee, but let's say 100 yards or so, and it'll vary, usually a little bit shorter. So that's the furthest they'll go, where a honeybee will travel 7 miles if needed. Now,
Okay. Yeah,
a standard honeybee hive will have, if it's not let grow excessively larger, and think 50,000 bees or so, let's say. That's about accurate. Well, that's 50,000 bees going in 50,000 directions, and, a lot of flowers. But again, the mason bees do a great job, and they don't. The attrition rate is much less, so you don't have to have as many bees, and they live a little bit longer, and they'll do more flowers. So, yeah, I'm all about bees, any type there are. But yes, the mason bees are really helpful in the city and neighborhoods where you can't have that tall beehive where it's just inconvenient.
Right.
Yeah, maybe not set for it. So these are kind of set and forget ones. There's things you can do to encourage, like the clays I was mentioning, and a water source for them. But mason bees will eventually just show up in your area. And again, all areas are different, so maybe quicker in some places than others. But you can also contact someone at Crown Bees named Dave online. So if you just type in Crown Bees, he'll supply and mail you the type of genetics in the mason bee for your area. So if you live in Virginia, or if you live in Washington State, you can order the type of mason bee that's, for your area acclimated in larva stage during the winter. And then you'll put it in your vegetable or fruit drawer in your refrigerator to keep them cold so they don't emerge too soon. Yep. And then once your weather in your area, because it differs and the weatherman's almost never right. So once you decide it's going to stay above 55, 60 degrees in your area, take these little cocoons out and you'll shove them in the little tubes, just one back in each one of these mason bee houses, and they'll emerge on their own. And then you started it that way. So there's options. So you don't necessarily have to wait. You can set it up like that.
What was the address for that guy?
Yeah, it's Crown Bees. And I'm going to be bringing it up right now so I can see if it's .com or .net. But it's going to be crownbees.com. crownbees.com. And that's an individual just happens to be up here in Washington State. And he's, I believe, the largest mason bee individual. I'm not sure how to term that one. But online source for, let me shut my window. For mason bee equipment. So he'll send you the larvas. And he's been doing studies for a couple of years on numbers. So he actually has people from around the country. So after they're in it for a first year, they can extract their own eggs from these houses, and they'll actually send them to him and or count them for Dave, and he does the surveys to see how the populations are expanding or growing, or so he's doing what he can there. So it's really interesting to do, and it's really easy too. So again, there's no equipment, you don't have to, for mason bees, no suits to buy, nothing to fear. Your neighbors aren't going to know you even have bees, so you're not disrupting anything. They're a lot of fun.
Nice.
And we take these little, the middle mason bee houses, the new Shungite ones too, they're convenient for, so I'll take them on some trails here now. We've started and they're black, and we Shungite resin coat them. So I'll 3D print the small mason bee house and then dip it in a S4 mixture Shungite resin, which of course is also black. So now they've been coated inside and out. So these little bee houses will last, in essence, forever until they're broken in the elements or whatnot. And they have a little roof on them. So So we're hoping to expand the bee populations there as well.
So what kind of resin are you using?
It's a 50 fixture mixture. So it's a, I'll tell you the exact type. So
I think he was asking you about the resin itself. Was that correct, Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm hoping it's environmentally safe.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are, because there's no heating, there's no toxins coming off of it, so it's environmentally safe as that. I mean, you don't want to drink it. It's a resin. It's a plastic mixture.
Right.
But that, yeah, so it's called Clear Cast is what it is. So it's a 50-50 mixture for those that are wanting to experiment with resins. There's no catalyst where you have to watch for percentages and, it's So it's really easy to use that way. And we use it in many devices. And then we add the S4 shungite powder to that, depending on which device we're talking about, in addition to other things. So, but no, works very well, sets pretty quickly, and it keeps the powder colloidal. Mm-hmm.
So we were talking before the radio show, and you were talking about like how much powder you had to use versus how much resin in order to make it where it's perfectly opaque and all of that, and you could still see little particles. I'm just wondering about the application of that clear cast with the S4 powder for making the mirrors.
I think it would work very well. It might take a couple layers, but also on the mirrors, I know that often there's a secondary coating, as we talked a little bit about behind it, to help with some of the change in pigments. But it works very well. Yeah, so it's very smooth, very quick as far as set times. So you don't have an issue because obviously some mirrors are convex. So if you're holding the mirror, it'll all, accumulate down the bottom. But with the quick setting of this, if you just sit there and rotate it, it stays pretty even. I think it worked real well.
Okay. Yeah, I will definitely check into that for my next batch.
Yeah, and we'll do like we were just talking about before the show, get you we'll get here quickly for the radio, but the small amounts of the cosmic silver tumbled nuggets. So we had that little bit of powder we were talking about. So I'll get you that in a vial form. Again, it's a small amount. So we'll have you that so you can experiment with it and add it to other mixtures. Because of course with shungite, as everybody knows, a little bit goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with the cosmic and the S4 powders. So yeah, I posted in the chat room one of the mirrors that you have online right now available. So that's great to see. I love the look of that one. It looks like a small, was it a clock? Is that, and people can look from the link we'll post in the show notes as well, but on one of Kevin's mirrors that we're talking about, it looks like maybe it was an older clock, like a wooden base and maybe a brass handle. Is that what you started with?
Yes, it is. And so it's not an extremely concave surface. It was an old clock with that clock face where it would bulge out, and then it's inverted, so it's coming in, and it's not a perfect curve. Like, it's old antique glass, so it has a bit of waviness, and so with any kind of bubble glass mirror, you have that visual distortion of the reflection, because when you first start doing a scry, you can see yourself in the mirror. But then if you shift your body at all, it's going to go and magnify on certain areas just based on the curvature of the mirror. And then with this inverse antique glass where it's doing the wavy glass, it's not so identifiable as your face. And the ways that it goes and transforms with any little motion is just, it's really good for getting your conscious mind to kind of just detach for a moment and just sit there and watch and let it go. Because, when we're scrying, we try and hold on to meaning and say, oh, well, that is me. That is my face. This is this thing I'm looking at, and try and keep it all really structured. And then with that inverse, particularly this antique glass, this wavy glass, it has been phenomenal for helping the conscious mind to just be enraptured. Like it can't even make sense of it. It doesn't need to. It's not anxiety producing. It's just that sweet surrender when you're just giving in and going with the scry. And
yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It's like a comfortable, I kind of describe it as that, a comfortable spot or feeling where all the other stresses and whatever go, and then it's just, you're in that spot. And I'm sitting here looking, I just shared you a picture of the mirror we're talking about in the chat, and just looking at it in an image form has a draw to it. So that's fascinating. I never even thought about that.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting. So I couldn't imagine having one in front of you and then just kind of falling into it sort of thing is how it feels. And yeah, that's really interesting.
So what I thought about, go ahead.
I just want, do you sell these?
I do. I've just set up an Etsy shop, and that's what Derek was talking about, is I had sent him the link. So I've got one mirror on there now. There's another, the larger bubble glass mirror that I was talking about earlier, before. That's that will be up soon. And then I've got to find more bubble glass. I also have a series of small rectangular flat mirrors, which would be a different price point because these are much more affordable to acquire for the base material.
Okay, what's your Etsy store? What's the name of it?
It's in the chat right now. I just posted it again.
Oh,
so
you
there's
did.
A link to it there.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay, excellent.
And he's got the
excellent.
One available. It was in the beginning of the room, but I know it scrolls by fast with people, so I just did it again.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Maybe we can sell these by the end of the show.
I'm hoping somebody buys it before I do because I don't want to start snatching these up and be that guy. So I would encourage, and I'm not kidding here, so I would encourage people to go ahead and grab those things because, those are really fascinating. And I love the personality of each one because you're not going out and buying a manufactured mirror right off, Walmart's shelf and going from that. You've got something with some personality and uniqueness already to it, and you start from there. So that's great.
It's a one of a kind. It has its own character.
Exactly.
It's a personality almost. Mm-hmm. So I was starting to mention is that because I do hypnotherapy, and when I'm with my clients, when I'm at the intuitive reading booth and doing the scrying, the facilitated scrying sessions, then I'm sitting there talking with the person and helping lead into that. And I'm not directing and guiding as far as like, you will now see this, but helping through just the hypnotic languaging patterns that to facilitate the mind to go and enter into this process. And then, especially put on a background track. My idea is to make audio files. I have the recording set up. I have a little foam soundproofing, not proofing, but sound treating space. And I have a good microphone and a preamp and everything, all of the hardware to do this. And I'm thinking of doing a series of audio guides for guiding sessions for scrying, for people who are wanting to get into scrying, but are just kind of sitting there looking at the mirror and going, I don't know what to do. What do I do? And then have kind of like a guided meditation concept. So.
And I was muted. I was sitting there talking. I think that's a great idea as far as the tie-in with the audio and the visuals. And then you're going to use your sixth, or the client use their sixth sense as well as you, and just all of them. That's
right.
That's great. Yeah. So interesting. And you do that when you're on the road at the different fairs as well. Is that, so you can basically do a session on the road with the client if needed?
I do the sessions with, because most of my clients are at the different Renaissance festivals, and festivals are on the weekends. I see my clients during the weekdays when there's no festival going on.
Sure.
And so I will do sessions with my clients there. and then, like in Georgia, I have the job at the intuitive reading booth. And so I do tarot reading, some short past life, rapid past life regression work. And then also the facilitated scrying sessions.
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know. I didn't think about that, that you could do the sessions at the various Renaissance or type of fairs you go to. And there's no reason not to, I guess, if you have your spot, just. That's a great idea, huh?
I mean, it's not ideal. I prefer especially if you're going to be doing like a past life regression, you want an hour and a half to go and work with that client and help them explore and let them find and discover discover things. So
yeah, even short ones right in front of you there are a great idea because then that gives them introduction and get their feet wet sort of thing and then know where to go from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And then do you have any other mirrors lined up right now for future scrying mirrors?
I have.
Kind of as you find them.
It's kind of as I find them. Like I said, I have, I think, five of the rectangular ones that I can do with the, I have enough S4 powder to go and make, you know, probably three or four of those into black shungite mirrors. And then I have the one convex, one concave that I have made already. And then I have my own personal one, which was my first one when I first discovered, like, oh my goodness, what? and it has, like I said, it has a personality. So like this, we have a relationship, this mirror and I. It's not one that's going to be for sale, but those two that I that I shared, the link that's on Etsy, and then the one that will be on Etsy, those are going to be for sale, and then the rectangular ones. And then as I go to antique stores and find other bubble glass with that curved glass, then there will be more available. But that's as it happens.
Well, this is exciting.
That makes sense. I mean, you got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is, because whatever works for people, to find out, to test your own potentiality. You know, why do we say that shungite leveled the playing field? Because it was allowing us as each individual to be drawn into a modality of becoming aware. I mean, we've got a woman, Jan Shaw, who interviews a new guest almost every week. And it is astounding. She's been doing it for 2 years. How many guests actually, it's, the way I think of it is that we're all going to the same place, but we're taking different trails to get there. Right. And this is just another offering to people, so that they can, it's a tool, but because shungite is a sentient entity, it's also a tool that is guiding you, protecting you. That's the beauty of it, is that you can't stumble into a problem, you know, it just doesn't happen, because as soon as you get outside of pure intent and your heart's loving, I believe that shungite actually turns on because it feels a certain heart frequency. It's like the on switch. And when it feels it, it goes, oh, okay, and it'll turn on. And then it's up to you as to how you want to interact with it. But what Kevin is giving us is an entirely unique way of entering shungite reality. But would you please do me a favor, Kevin? Do not sell one to Derek. I don't know where he would go. You know what I'm saying? It's like he keeps making more and more devices that can easily be used to enhance your own development. So, you know, kudos to you both. Very interesting.
So what about Walt Silva? Could I give one to him?
Did you, what, oh, Walt? Yeah, give one to Walt. Oh, please, give one to Walt. Yeah, do you know what this guy's doing now? Well, I don't know if you listen to the Cosmic Reality Show, but we've got a device now that is turning off the Nagalase in the bodies, actually negating it completely, and neutralizing it. He likes the word neutralizing it. Neutralizing it, and also putting in the GC map that tells the immune system, get going, we got a problem here. And so cancer should be eliminated within, you know, I think it's 6 weeks the reports are going to start coming in. So we go out with this thing, right? And everybody, I was doing it for one person. I said, well, why don't we just try to do it for everybody? It's not natural. Cancer is not natural. It does not have Gaia's signature. And so then he was clearing up the Black Sea, because he's been working with the Russians over in the Ukraine about water problems and stuff, making devices. And so he's already cleared up a whole reservoir and a whole area in the Ukraine of radiation in the air with a device that we did send him. But they weren't doing what we asked them to do with it, because we told them, please go put it in the lake and put it at this depth. And, you know, well, they never got it even into the lake because it was clearing the radiation out of the air wherever it was going. And
nice.
Yeah, it was clearing it. And this is, okay, I can understand it clearing it. But then it's like they take it someplace else, but the place they just cleared would stay cleared. So another aspect, but he was using something that is mind-bending, what he was using. I don't even want to get into that. Anyway, but then when they came back to him and they said, oh, the Black Sea is dying. It's got all this algae growing in it. And it's that green stuff. Actually, we've got it here in South Florida. It's all over the beaches. It's it begins with an S. And I think it was the stuff that they used when they were promoting blue-green algae to eat. Do you remember that? Anyway. It was a while back. But anyway, so the Black Sea is now beginning to get this stuff in it. And one of the lakes not far from the Black Sea, I think it feeds into it or whatever, one feeds into the other, had the problem so bad that the lake was almost dead. And so the people in, you know, seeing it now in the Black Sea, they were all freaked out. But they'd heard about Walt. So I said, Walt, we can't keep sending up devices. I said, let's just use remote. And so when he's doing a remote, he pulls up a map of where he's dealing with. And then he puts the device on the map and programs the device, which is an energy device made with, well, it's shungite and coils of copper and magnets and a little bit of this magic and that magic that's the Walt Silva thing. And so he said, you know, that I see he agreed. And so that's what he was doing. And then I said, well, wait a minute. If you're going to clean up the Black Sea, why don't you just clean up everything? Right? And so he said, okay. And I'm checking with Gaia, and yep. And then she said something to me that I said to Walt, and Walt just stopped. I've never heard Walt stop. I mean, he just was, like, kind of stunned. And apparently he had been doing this particular thing, and but wasn't sure it was right. And what she said to me didn't make any sense, but it made sense to him. So that's what we did. He did it. I'm just there as asking him questions and kind of prodding him. Can we do this? Can we do that? And so we went on, you know, the radio, and we said, please, you know, if we're right, it's going to have happened already. Go down to your local lakes. And look, does the water look like it's cleaner? And, you know, well, we just got a report, and it was Lake Tao. Tao? And is that what it is? No. I'll have to look it up here. I think it's Lake Tao. Anyway, this water was so crystal clear, it was unbelievable. And all that was said was, this is a picture of whatever lake it is, and thank you, and yes, you, all right, it was a real good friend of the Shungite people in Cosmic Reality, Fernando, and I guess he thought it was a secret, because these stories that I'm telling don't get on YouTube. I don't put this radio show on YouTube, because we go places that, you know, are really far out there. Because if we don't test the boundaries, how are we going to know? And and the funny thing was, when I looked at this picture, when we got the report back from the Russians who were there on the Black Sea, they reported that the waters and the translation from Russian to English was translucent. And I oddly, when I looked at this water picture, I went, it looks translucent. And I never would have used that kind of a phrase before. But, so please go out and check your water. Any local lake, any river, you know, if you're on a canal here in South Florida, go out and look at the water. If you're on the beach, go look at the water. I know they're having a tremendous amount of the seaweed just coming onto the beaches. since we did this, but it might have been happening before that. I just started seeing reports. I actually looked it up and found South Beach, South Florida was being covered by this stuff. But it's because it's coming up on the beaches. It's dead. So, yeah. Shungite is teaching us so many things, giving us opportunities.
Nice.
Yeah. So what else, guys?
So what else, huh?
I'm bringing up the image, and we can talk about it next hour if you want, of the big tree we added to the Shungite grid, they're calling it. I'm actually looking at the sign now, so we're talking about the redwood tree in California, 1,500 years old.
Yeah, jeez. I saw that picture.
Yeah, that's and I was bringing it up just now. So what I'm talking about is I was on another a little trip here recently, and we were down in Southern California, came up to Northern California where the California redwoods are, and I actually run out of nuggets on what we're calling the Shungite grid trips, where I'll play Shungite, as others have heard, in various on trees or in waterways. And I'd run out, as I'd mentioned, so came across this tree, and I'll post a picture, but they're calling it the big tree. And it's a California redwood, and its estimated age is 1,500 years old. And the height is 286 feet tall. The diameter across of the tree's trunk, and it's a living tree, is 23.7 feet. And it's 74 and a half feet around the circumference. So this thing is massive. And we walked up on it, and when I saw that one, it was... I was like, there is no way we can't make this part of the Shungite grid. So all I actually had left was my own personal cosmic silver tumbled nugget. I had a 9-day nugget that I tumbled in silver around my neck. So I actually took that one off, unwrapped it, and stuck it in the tree. There was a small little nook where I went up and did my grounding hands on the tree, and I got a huge benefit, an energy boost from that with this tree. But then tucked the nugget in there. And left it and tied it in part of Shungite grid. And my daughter had mentioned to me, because that was my, you know, my personal pendant, my favorite one. And I'd made the comment that would be the only thing on this planet that I can think of that would take that personal pendant of mine off of my neck. And it was a 1,500-year-old tree it took to have that happen. But I did. And it was the most incredible feeling when I was leaving. And actually, it's coming up again now. It's interesting. In closing up my throat and heart chakra. But as I was walking away, I was thinking about that. I was thinking, you know, well, that would be the only instance. And I actually felt and heard a thank you from the tree. And it was I don't even know how to explain that, but it's an energy feeling. And it actually spun up what I'll determine as my heart chakra and just kind of welded up to almost the point of tears. But it was a loving, there it comes again, thank you feeling from the tree. And that was that kind of blue. And I have a lot of, we'll just say, odd experiences in my life. Many I don't talk about. This was a huge one as far as energetically. And then I don't know how to explain other than it was like another person there. So it was another entity, and it was, and feeling that was just never so tangible in my life as I had with that experience in that tree. So it was pretty incredible.
So where is this tree? It's in Northern California.
Yeah, it's actually in Northern California, and they call it Big Tree. And I'm going to try and post an image in chat here, but it's one of the largest redwood trees that are still, known, that luckily wasn't cut down. And you can kind of hike. So it's off of Highway 101 in Northern California in the redwoods. And then basically there's signs and whatnot you can find. And there's a short hike out to the woods where you can walk up on it. And there's several redwoods there, but this is just a key one you can get to. And yeah, it's pretty incredible. So it's, I mean, just the estimated age at 1,500 years old. I mean, how many lifetimes have each of us lived in that time frame? I mean, what has this tree seen or felt come and go? I mean, it's just incredible.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is awe-inspiring.
Yeah, it was being there. Just seeing the trees is awe-inspiring. And then just even being around them and just taking part in this. And then the Shungite grid that everybody's, it's not a me thing, it's a worldwide grid now. So it's, everybody's part of it. And it's fun. I encourage others to do it, because you'll actually feel a thank you, or like an, I term it an energetic hug from the trees.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
After you do it. And especially when I did that 9-day one, tucking it in there, and it's just a little nook in the base of the tree that I could reach. Again, that tree is, well, 74 and a half feet around. I mean, I don't even know how many people that would take. Yeah, I mean, it's enormous. So, but yeah, so we like doing things like that, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, isn't you know, an arm span, if you hold out your arms, isn't that so many feet? Who knows that?
It's your height. It's your height. So whatever, approximately your height. So if you're a 6 foot person, you stick out your arms. That's 6 foot. So I'm.
So six I'm, you know, into 78 is 13 people.
Oh, probably. And I'm challenged with height myself. So it'd probably take a few more Derricks to wrap around that tree. But yeah, it's enormous. And just seeing the people around it. I mean, I had to pause and get some wait for people to move so I could get a photo. And there would be, I don't know, 15 people just in front of the tree that you could see that were still blocking just that one view. I mean, it's incredible. It really is. So I got a couple of images, and I'll share. I shared a couple up there, but yeah, I didn't realize that. You know, I knew there were big trees out there, but 1,500 years old. That's not even the oldest one. That's just the one that we could get to. So yeah, that's
well,
that's
you know, speaking about the Shungite grid, the Russians asked if I would do something about Shungite, an article for some magazine. And I was working on the book, so I kind of like took the two things together to make an article, and because it was going to be included in the book, the information. And so I was talking about the bees and what the bees have taught us about Shungite. They've confirmed what we were saying about Shungite and then, you know, done much more. And, you know, I was referencing the sixth extinction event. And so if the bees are having this amazing response to Shungite, then, you know, perhaps all of nature that's in collapse can. And then I go into, you know, well, what can we possibly do? You know, and I said, well, it's already happening. Because all these people all over the world are going all over these different places and putting the Shungite nuggets. So there's it's like human beings on their own are being compelled to go. And we've got people out there that I don't even know them. I mean, Derek has done, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 nuggets out there, right, Derek?
Oh, yes, at least.
You know, so, and I say in the article, I say, who knows if this is going to work, but at least we're trying, we're coming together, and the bees have shown us that it works. So why wouldn't it, you know, help reverse the, you know, collapse of the biosphere, beginning with the microorganisms in the soil and the insects? So, yeah, it's not only, this isn't just a game. This is something that, you know, should, by everything that I know about enterology and how the weaves work together, that people going out there with their intent, with their thought, interjecting into the earth grid and the Shungite grid, and the tree grid, and the rock grid, and the water grid, every place you put it, the soil grid. You know, all of this is connected, and when you put that Shungite in there, boom, infinite potentiality. Yes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and there's even people in chat now talking about where you can feel it in your garden, so you don't have to go to one of these monster redwood trees that I did. Any tree, any bush, shrub, take advantage and just spread the Shungite because it's going to benefit it. I mean, I've done 15,000 miles. We calculated the miles approximately, but it was over 15,000 miles of Shungite grid traveling this year on over the span of several trips. And we not just these large trees, but in waterways, creeks, rivers, streams, the ocean, all up and down the West Coast. And then, you know, various other places. So it all makes a difference.
Kevin, you're making a little background noise on you should probably mute, but that's okay. You can talk now. I'm just saying. And what would you like to say? Because I kind of cut you off.
I was thinking kind of like with the bees doing their thing where when they rub up against the nuggets, they go and take those just microscopically small amounts of dust and spread that around their whole, you know, their 7 square miles or whatever that a honeybee can do, and that us humans who are going and distributing and blessing the ecosystem with the shungite, we're going and doing a similar thing, just on a more macro scale for the most part. I mean, I'm sure there's some of us who are going and just taking shungite powder and blowing it while they're going down the highway or something. But in a more macro sense, for the most part, of just taking the nuggets and going and doing what you're talking about, Derek, where you go and put it in a tree and in the waterways, Nancy, and just going in. There's a feeling of being on a team. It's not just us doing the thing. It's the bees are doing this, but we're not saying, okay, bees, you do all the work. We're going and doing the work. And then who knows what comes next?
Well, what I was saying in the article, I said that every single bee has one mission and one mission only, and that's to make the hive thrive. And
right.
Human beings, they don't have that responsibility or mission concept for the most part. They're into, well, I've got to make my family. You know, they've lost the concept that your family is the entire hive. You know, you've broken off into these individual pieces, and nobody can survive. No civilization can survive that way. So we have to come together like a bee does in a hive to do the things to make it thrive, because then everybody thrives. And if we don't get over this working for self instead of working for the hive, we're likely not to survive as a species. The planet's going to survive. You know, should just make more or different. But, right. You know, I mean, humanity, it could be, you know, well, we've done this, it failed, okay, let's get rid of it, you know. I mean, but there's just too many people coming together.
So have you heard of, you know, Rupert Sheldrake? The gentleman from Britain who has the morphogenetic fields concept and theory. It's one of those things, you know, you've got all the fish who form schools of fish that are moving in ways that should not be possible according to just regular physical activity. And it's that they're part of a morphic field which goes and informs each individual. And so like the way that ants work, it's not that every ant knows where every other ant is or all of this, they're just going and acting according to the morphogenetic field, the morphic field. And so similarly then with the bees going and spreading shungite over the environment, and then humans who are also now going and doing that, we're starting to operate more in this morphogenetic thing, not necessarily as the self-centered and not necessarily as an altruistic, but just being tuned in to the morphic field. And it's just a natural, normal way of being. It's the Wu way, the way, you know, the action of inaction almost.
Yeah, we refer to the same thing when we refer to the weaves. You know, I mean, it's just a different word for it. But the key is that in any one of those fields, it's the sum total of all of the consciousnesses working together. And, you know, somebody could say, well, this sounds like hive mind. And I would say to them, we are in a hive minded thing. We're being programmed to think that we can't do. We're being programmed to think that this person is your enemy, so let's get an army and kill them. Your religion, well, my God is better than your God, and you better hate those people that don't have your God. I mean, all of this crazy crap is basically mind control, and it's hive mind control in that they're making us think the way that they want you to instead of working together and having, because my understanding of it is that it's not one mind doing it. It's like all of these little individual sensors sensing and combining together know which way to go. You know, it's the total of all these beings that make the mind overlay that can turn them and move them in ways that you wouldn't think possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
No, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
So we got to use our imaginations, and it's 4 minutes and 24 seconds. Julia Westlin, John Lennon.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. And I was only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Imagine no possession.
Welcome back to the Shungite Show. I think that I didn't give Kevin enough warning. that we were going to go to break because he messaged us and said, I will not be able to join you for the second hour. Thank you for an awesome conversation. Were you aware it was only an hour, Derek?
Are you muted? No, huh?
Okay.
Nope, I'm unmuted now. Yeah. No, maybe I had something come up on his end.
Yeah. You seem a little low on the, are you talking into your mic?
Yeah, let me adjust. I have two mics here, so how's that? Is that any better?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you. Okay, well, all right, so what we're going to do anyway is we're going to play Barbara Meneses' update on Shungite. Mm-hmm. I got to make sure I got the right one. Yeah, here it is. Okay. I haven't even listened to this, so we'll listen to it probably at the same time. But what she is doing here is that when she heard our discussion of what she said the last time, Shungite said, "Hey, I want to answer some questions." Apparently, because she's calling it Shungite question and answers. So it's 20 minutes, and we'll just play it now, and then we can talk about it. That sound all right?
Perfect.
Okay. And Kevin, thank you so very much. Awesome. And Etsy, you can get his stuff at Etsy.
I shared the link.
And get it before Derek gets it.
Exactly. Better be quick.
All right. So we're going to now play 20 minutes with Barbara Meneses and Shungite Questions and Answers.
Hello, Nancy. Hello, Derek. Hello, Dolly. Hello, Walt and everybody in Cosmic Reality. And also on YouTube in the Shungite radio show. I just listened to the radio show where you uploaded and reproduced the recording that I did with the fourth session from Shungite and the conversation after the recording between Nancy and Derek was fascinating, especially talking about the black goo. And as I was listening, Shungite was kind of, vibrating in my field, kind of telling me we have to do another session or we have to talk bioenergetically. Remember that the conversations that we are having are purely bioenergetic. So after I finished listening to the show, I went and I sat and formally, opened a session to talk with Shungite from this bioenergetic perspective. And so I asked many of the questions that were coming into my mind as I was listening to Nancy talk about the black goo. So I'm going to go through the questions that I ask Shungite and the answers. And at the end, maybe try to start elaborating maybe an hypothesis or a theory that maybe can be beneficial for us to keep on working and keep on investigating what is happening. So the first question I asked to Shungite is black goo? And here I'm referring to the black goo, the one that seems to be controlled by artificial intelligence. So is this black goo made of Shungite? And the answer from Shungite is no, a clear no. Then I ask, is black goo the primordial thought that gives birth to creation of planets and other life forms? And the answer was no. And then I will explain this later, but let me carry on with the questions I ask. Is Shungite black goo? And the answer was no. Is what we call black goo controlled by artificial intelligence? The answer from Shungite was yes. Then I ask, is Shungite something that is used to create life forms such as an entire planet? And the answer was yes. Then I ask, is black goo an attempt to mimic the creative properties of Shungite? And the answer was yes. And I ask, how successful has been this black goo and the artificial intelligence working with the black goo successful at mimicking Shungite? And according to Shungite, it has been successful at a 40% when it should be successful at 100%. then I re-ask again, so black goo has not created planets or sentient beings? And Shanghaite said, no. And I ask, is black goo here to confuse and distort in the same way that we have a false light and a real light when we are considering, you know, these dualistic battle of light and darkness, or you can call it fallen angels and, you know, angels that haven't fallen, and beings that could be distorting the true original light. And the answer was yes. So black goo is something that is being used nowadays to confuse and distort people in this planet or beings in this planet. Then I ask, has black goo kidnapped bits of the creative consciousness of this planet to be able to mimic reality? And the answer was yes, which this was a little bit my suspicion. I was having the feeling that an aspect of what you call Gaia or the planet, the consciousness of the planet and the creative aspect within the consciousness of this planet has been taken or kidnapped or used. So here we go again with the story of the feminine, the divine feminine, the creative feminine aspect of all creation. And we can go even, you know, further, talking about the myth of Sophia. This creative feminine aspect has been kidnapped and raped throughout the whole cosmos and in this same planet by beings who are envying this creative power that the feminine aspect of creation has to give birth to planets, to life itself. And this is being, if you want, used, misused, and abused, because these powers who are trying to manipulate us, they do not have by themselves this creative power, because long, long time ago, they disconnected from source. And so when you disconnect from actually your true nature, you cannot access your own creative power. So you have to look for something that replicates and mimic, which is possibly at the very, very origin of what an artificial intelligence is. Someone who was so deeply disconnected from life, from love, from truth, from the creative powers that come from the divine, if you want, as the original one. Someone who has disconnected so much from that can only try to attempt to clone, to mimic, to replicate, to copy, but it's never original. And even to try to copy, replicate, and clone, you still need something that is original. You still have to have a little spark of the original creative life force to be able to replicate. So according to Shanghaite, this type of replication or mimicking has only been successful at a 40%. So maybe why, when you are saying in your Cosmic Reality radio show that black goo is you know, part of the original consciousness or creative power of the Earth or another planet, and maybe bits and bobs of these black goo from other planets already distorted may have landed onto this Earth and then being maybe captured by the Nazis. I don't know about this. You know, listening to you was the first time that I heard about this, but it makes sense because through the laws of resonance, if that black goo is already totally distorted, has, you know, evil, darkish intents, it's going to be attracting those who have already this type of corruption within themselves, such as possibly the Nazis. So it makes sense. So let's carry on. So after asking whether these aspect of the creative power within the consciousness of the Earth has been kidnapped to be able to mimic by means of the black goo, and we got this answer by Shanghaite that yes, it has happened. Then I reconfirm asking again, so in this planet, an aspect of the creative consciousness of Gaia or the planet, in whichever way you want to call it, has been kidnapped to to be used in the black goo as a signal for humanity to accept. And so Gaia said yes. So here what is happening is that, hold on, let's finish the answers. So then Shanghai said, this is part of the problem of separation between Gaia and humanity. So we have black goo and we have the creative consciousness of the planet, which can take this kind of shape, just like a black goo. It's like a substance that is very creative. And so by humanity being suddenly exposed to the false creative substance called black goo coming from an artificial intelligence and the original creative substance, humanity now is confused and doesn't know what to choose, because both substances have part of the creative consciousness and the creative power of the planet. So our bodies, even though we are exposed to the black goo, our bodies are not going to be receiving a negative signal from the black goo, because from on a very deep and cellular manner, we are accepting the black goo, because there is inside of the black goo a kidnapped aspect of the consciousness of the planet, which needs to be there, if you want, like an homeopathic pill, for us to accept it within our system as something that is good and something that we can start interrelating and communicating with. In the same way as this original planet, as it was created long time ago, had a very strong and clear connection with all life forms in this planet. And so the communication was flowing, but throughout, you know, the ages, throughout the different manipulations, throughout the different interference of, you know, call it dark, you know, forces invading this place and having a different agenda, this communication has been tampered upon, and now we are not able to clearly receive the signal, neither from Shanghai, neither from the planet, and we are more in touch due to the technology, due to our addictions to the internet, to the video games, and everything else, to the black goo that is communicating with us, because we have an open door, thanks to the little bit that has been kidnapped from the original consciousness of the Earth, or of Gaia, or of the divine source creative power that is embedded in the black goo and possibly in many other things. And so we are not recognizing what is really organic and what is really artificial. So we are being conned and manipulated and distorted, which is calling us to develop a greater sense of discrimination. And I think, and as you will see now with when we carry answer questions, you know, listening to the questions and the answers that Shanghai is giving us, Shanghai is one of the main missions of Shanghai is to restore this the proper connection, if you want, with the organic line. So let me read my notes. So I ask Shanghai, so indeed, we have stopped listening to the consciousness of Gaia, and we are listening more to the black goo right now, right? And Shanghai said yes. And I said, okay, so according to you, Shanghai, what is the level of infestation in humanity of the black goo? So to what degree is humanity infested with and surrounded with the black goo to the point of, you know, being listening more to the black goo rather than the conscious, the organic consciousness as it was intended originally to be? And her answer is a 68% infectation in humanity. So I ask Shanghai, so you are really on a mission here to try to put things, you know, right? And she said yes. And I ask, okay, so what are you trying to do? And so the answer was to reestablish the correct bond between Source and humanity, Shanghai and humanity, Gaia and humanity. Call it Gaia, you know, the consciousness of the planet, because I know some people don't resonate with the word Gaia. Humanity and humanity with nature. and to help us recognize what is organic and what is artificial. So this is the main mission, if you want, at you know, in this time and age for Shanghai. This is what she's trying to do with us. So because we are wearing a pendant that is 100% holding its pure essence, which is the last message of Shanghai when we talked to her by means of this conversation, this bioenergetic conversation, you're wearing a necklace or a pendant, or you're, you know, carrying a Shanghai piece of stone with you that is, you know, 24 hours a day holding for you a mirror in which you can see yourself with your own essence fully activated. So I ask Shanghai, so really you're a teacher for us? And she said, yes, I am a teacher. So she's teaching us how to recover our full essence. And we need to recover our full essence, firstly, recognizing that our true essence is being blocked because we are not able to recognize what does it mean to be in our true essence, because we are being given images and mirrors that are false. And these mirrors are coming through the artificial intelligence, through the black goo, and through all the infestation that is showing us a false light, a false sentience, a false organic essence. And so because it is false and we have lost long, long time ago the ability to recognize what is pure, what is organic, what is real, we are in confusion. We are in ignorance. But in essence, we only need to recognize that we have already the purity of our essence within ourselves. The only thing we need to do is call it upon, believe that we have it, recognize that we have it, and allow it to inform us, inform our energy fields, rather than being informed by a false light, by a false, you know, artificial intelligence, by a false, you know, creative thought within the black goo. Rather than that, choose to tune in to your truth, to your essence, to that, you know, which you truly are in essence. And this is giving the spiritual path and the awakening path a whole new dimension, because now we are understanding more, if you want, who is the enemy, so-called enemy. And this so-called enemy is distortion, is actually, you know, us not being able to look ourselves in the mirror, because what is being reflected by this false mirror is a false image of who we are. And so if every day you are looking at yourself in a false mirror, you end up believing what you are seeing in the mirror, but the mirror is reflecting something that is false. And you are constantly throughout the day being bombarded by video games, films, everything in your reality with, through the technology, is reflecting something that is not who you truly are. And this whole entire world, has, through the powers to be who have also been possessed by this type of mentality, they are actually, pushing away people who are holding this integrity, who are really holding their essence. And so these people do not get jobs, they do not get visible, they never go on television, they are never there for mirroring back at you what is a human being that is really holding itself in its 100% pure integrity. So, you know, there is no role modeling out there, except, you know, those people who have done their spiritual work and who have awakened to this fact. Even, you know, they may not be contemplating things in terms of black goo artificial intelligence, but they are sensitive enough to the voice within themselves that is walking them into this organic, natural way of living. And so these people are the ones that are going to be holding for you, for me, and for everybody, this integrity. And Shanghai is also doing it. So we are not alone. This is not, you know, a desperate thing. but we are in the middle of a so-called battle between two timelines, if you want. Are we going to go to this cyborg, you know, mentality where we are going to become one with the machines and we are going to lose our organic nature? Or are we going to go for the organic? Are we going to really wake up to who we truly are in nature, just as we are? And this aspect is what Nancy said, that other civilizations in other galaxies were in awe about humanity and who we truly are, and that we are going to be the last ones being able to recognize our glory and our purity and our divine essence. We tend to be the last ones to realize it. So I think it's time that we start realizing it. For the sake of the planet, I think, you know, it is highly important that we recover who we truly are and we take the seat that we need to take as humanity, as one family, not only the seat inside the planet, as guardians of the planet, to shift everything that has been going on that is not beneficial in this planet, but also to take the seat for the rest of the cosmos, because we are also becoming the solution to a very old problem that is happening in the cosmos. And the cosmos is looking at us right now, you know, questioning, are we going to make it? Are we going to make it not only for the planet Earth, but for the whole cosmos? Are we going to really step up and be who we truly are, yes or no? And I think the answer, at least for me, is yes. And even if I, you know, die tomorrow, at least I will be living who I am today in all my glory and in all that I am. And here it is, you know. So let's start mirroring each and every one of us this true essence, so that humanity can reestablish the bond with the planet, the bond with nature, the bond within ourselves, and the bond with Source as well. So this is the message that Shanghai wanted to deliver today. And thank you very much. Many blessings. Bye.
Okay, my head is spinning and timing is everything. Wait a minute, let me mute you. You there?
Oh, wow, yeah. And I'm here with a bunch of notes I jotted down. I'm going to have to listen to that again.
Okay, I've got to make this point. Barbara did this at least last week. She had no idea that Kevin the Renaissance Man would be on talking about mirrors, black mirrors. He's crying mirrors. And just the fact that they went to the concept of mirror. I mean, I was... what do you have to say about it?
Oh, yeah, that couldn't have been more, you know, synchronistic. That was incredible. And that, like I was saying about the comments, I'm just sitting here jotting down notes thinking, oh my gosh, all this information and another way of looking at it. And then again, like you mentioned, she didn't even know Kevin was going to be here, because we didn't know he was going to be here until I think yesterday. So that's what's incredible. I'm absolutely going to listen to this recording a couple times. And then whenever you're ready, I've got notes here, but
go for the notes. Go.
Yeah, I'll go far beyond this show, but I mean, just look through here. Well, okay. One comment was, Shanghai is only 40% currently. We're using it at its 40% effectiveness. Now I reworded that a little bit for my reasons, but that's incredible. So that means there's another 60% of let's just say strength or use or ability of Shanghai that we have yet to even, you know, unleash or harness. So that's incredible. It's just what we're doing and the changes we're making and the effects it's having. Shanghai on us, our surroundings, our consciousness, and how we're working with it at the 40% level, that's just mind-blowing to me, that we're not even at halfway what could be done. And then just from that alone, and then she goes into every 68% of humanity is basically, in the term was infected, and that's with the artificial intelligence or black goo on one level or another. And that pretty much doesn't surprise me. That seemed, you know, right about right. If anything, I would have thought maybe a little bit higher. But, you know, what do I know? But it's interesting. So there's just the numbers are interesting. I'm a numbers guy. And so I can kind of wrap my head around that a little bit and see it in percentages. But that's let me see. The other one here is the fact that we can communicate with what we know about the Shungite, of course. But the black goo, you know, that's not something I'd be interested in. But how it's kind of the... complete opposite sort of thing, and it's being used as such. Because I don't have that as big a background in black goo as maybe you do or others on the understanding of it and how it's being used. But the way I see it, with that 40% effectiveness of shungite, well, then, okay, let's add some more percentages on there and really, you know, make some change and differences and devices. And then do you have anything here? I'm still looking through my notes here.
Well, what I excuse me, found very interesting is that my basic takeaway is Source God was female. And, I mean, that only makes sense. Everybody wants to make a, you know, if you, let's, you know, put a gender on it. Well, they want to go with male. Well, no, it's female. How can you have creation, you know, by everything that we know, if you don't have the mother womb? So, you know, and I never really considered that. I mean, I just went to all that is, male and female in the source thing. But now I'm looking like, I'm going like, well, how very interesting is this? So how can the male energy compete with a female organic energy? They can do, as she's suggesting, make robots and clones and all this other stuff, right? So when you get down to it, is it not so much a battle between God, biological creator, and Lucifer, the you know, Silicon Valley creator? Or is it one of female versus male? Because the female, yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's like, because I really, I don't think in terms of gender, but the way that this presentation was made to me was definitely suggesting that. The black goo concept is something that's been around for quite a while. And I do have a lot of time spent studying it. And what she was saying regarding it makes a lot of sense in, you know, what I know. In that you do have the creator energy that somehow got partially taken over. So the signature in black goo, alien black goo, that can easily infect people, this comes out of Nazi Germany. They found, you know, 3 ton of the schist that makes the ore, you know, black goo, that they were using to make all sorts of, you know, knives and knickknacks, and surrounding themselves with this black goo that had the signature of Gaia herself. Because when I started making the connection to Gaia, it became very clear to me that as she progressed, we progressed, but as we progressed, she progressed. It was like a dance between humanity and Gaia herself, that Gaia herself was not in a very good state from a spiritual energetic standpoint. Something was holding her back. Something was, I won't say missing. I didn't go missing. It was more like that she's not able to make the next leap in her own evolution and consciousness without humanity doing the same thing. And that's why when Walt and I got together and we started doing all these insanely crazy things, it was with the concept that we were actually witnessing not the source of the power or the fuel to make a manifestation happen, but we were witnessing what Gaia is capable of doing. And by the witnessing, not only do you give her permission to do magical things, but you also give permission to yourself to do it. And so every time we would make one outrageous claim of what shungite could do, and it turned out to be true, it would take us to the next level. Shungite is an incredible teacher, just as Barbara was alluding to. You know, what the bees and the shungite are teaching us about shungite is really stunning. Hello? Are you there?
And I'm unmuted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no, yeah. Regarding the bees and the shunga that you just mentioned, it is stunning. And, again, they're not performing bees. They're not trick bees. They respond and react to the shungite on many levels, just as we do. So it's good to see it that way. And it's not just the bees. It's all life, of course, like you mentioned, from plants to my pets that I'm sitting here looking at, my cats and dogs. Just the other day, our dog bee walked up to us, opened her mouth, and just dropped another piece of shungite. I don't even know where she's stealing it from, but she keeps taking it from our shungite stash, and she's drawn to it just as the bees are. And they want to be around it. So it definitely makes a difference.
Did you find your notes?
Yeah. I did. And I'm looking over them here. And she had mentioned that the black goo was used to distract beings. And that makes sense because you were kind of mentioning that as well. So at least for me, and I don't know which came on the scene, let's say, first, what became more known, was it black goo or shungite? And I know shungite's been around, you know, for a long time, and depending on which circles we're talking about, but here in the U.S., it seems to me like they came around pretty similar time frames. I don't know what your experience is, but 2000, at least for me, I don't know, I'd say around 2012 or 13. Maybe I was doing more research on it and looking into it from there, as far as the black goo coming onto the scene and me hearing it. But that's kind of odd to me that they both, so it's like a distraction. Well, I guess that's exactly what it would be. So when shungite's about to come out and get known to the people and animals and whatnot and earth, well, put out the opposite and use the distraction. Does that make sense?
Well, actually, I consider it more of a eye-opener. Because we were talking shungite in 2014, and then 2014, but the black goo thing had to have been in that time frame after 2014, because we were talking about black goo. Now, black goo had come into the, let's say, the consciousness regarding the Falkland Islands, which was whenever that was. I don't even remember anymore. But it was, you know, back a while. And that was because they had found this black goo and they were all trying to get it and stuff. There was a lot of activity around the time that the Deepwater Horizon went down. Because you know that story. It was... They were drilling deeper than anybody had gone before, and they were trying to get into what they were calling I forget now. It's the oil that is absolutely pure, and you correct me because you know more about this than I do. But the oil that is really really pure, really really pure, and it's way down deep, and the metaphysicians are saying that's actually could be the black goo we're associating with Gaia. When I first saw it, I thought of it more like a lymphatic system. You know, it was like the oil or was underneath the crust, and so it was the crust moves on top of the core. And I'm thinking that was more like a lubricant, and then probably a protection thing, a lymphatic system. That's the way I saw it. But according to Harold Cross Bella, he was saying that this is the sentience of the black goo on the planet, and that they were actually after that, and that there were submarines and all sorts of really military stuff happening there. So it is a fascinating story. It goes on forever. We've talked about it in many shows, because what I say when I started this, I said it seemed like an example. It seemed like it was teaching us about potential of consciousness in forms that we had not really ever addressed before. And once we began to look at that, it started answering questions like, how is it that you've got human beings that she alluded to that are out there doing their things individually, holding down the energy, and then you've got whole segment of the population that is mind controlled, doesn't seem to be able to think. And those people, and I'm talking like politicians and royal family, and, you know, if those people are actually under the control of this alien black goo, then that's something we can fix. But you can't fix a flaw in humanity that would allow people to become psychopathic, sociopathic, absolute evil. I mean, how do you deal with that? And that was the problem I was having. How can you understand that your own human family is capable of that? And maybe it's an excuse to get off the hook for it. You know, no, it's not our fault. We're being mind controlled. But we're all being mind controlled. Who do you want in charge? I say me. I'll program it the way I want it. So again, every time I listen to Barbara, it's fascinating. It makes you think. Makes you think outside the box again. Over to you.
It does. No, it does. Well, I was just for those. So, I've actually had my hands on this, and I'll tell a quick story. For those that don't know, I'm an ex commercial deep sea diver. So I was a hard hat diver. We had the umbilical cord with air, and I used to dive off oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. So I was the guy that they would send down just many hundreds of feet, depending on the job. And sometimes depending on, or I would also pilot what's called an ROV. So it's a remote operated vehicle. So I was also the guy that would have a little control stick in your hand and pilot this little robot underwater, flying it around. And so whether I was piloting that or down there myself, we were dropped on these, at the edge of these oil rigs, or taken out on ships sometimes to where they say, oh, there's something, a leak coming up out of the ocean floor down here. So then we drop down with, you know, high-tech equipment. I think they call it a mason jar. And we'd go down there and drop down the bottom and just jam it in there and take samples. And we would get this oil, black goo, depending on the job, different types all over us. And it would destroy our wetsuits all the time. So when I would do this job, I'd drop down and I'd realize that, well, I'm going to have to write off all this equipment, because it would just destroy it and eat through it, and even our air hoses and things at times. So we'd be limited on our time frame down there.
Well, confirms something that they were talking about, that the some submarines down there, when they attempted to deal with the oil itself, that their vessel started to deteriorate.
The seals will.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rubber. We had neoprene, so our... Often we would just dive because it was Gulf of Mexico. I lived or dove out of Louisiana, Texas. So often we would just commercial dive in pants, Levi pants, and long sleeve shirts because of the weather. But in these situations, we had the huge warnings of don't let it touch, nothing other than don't let it touch you. But that was impossible because we're in it, swimming and breathing it, and the vapors get in the air. So then in our neoprene, so our neoprene wetsuits would basically disintegrate, and or our shoes. Rubber boots, in essence, think rain boots is what we would wear. So when we jump in as a commercial diver, we have weights around us. So I would basically drop and plummet to the bottom of the ocean floor with this air hose going all the way up to the surface on a compressor for me. And then I would walk around and do my samples. And there's always a video camera strapped to our head or our helmet where we can see what's going on and get these samples of the black goo or oils or, you know, down there. That often they say get the crude oil samples, but it would look different. There's all different types down there, but regardless, when it's on you, it's, and I'm thinking back on it, it has an effect energetically when it's around you, with that whole environment, that whole area. So I know that's not saying too much or elaborating very well, but it's, you know, when you're around it, I can tell you that. And as far as getting it off of, and I'm talking about, it's where they're, again, they're called by different names, the oil, the crude oil, the black goo, and the goo portion was more tar-like. So there would be different viscosities of it down there. I'd come up, some of it would be sticky. But more often than that, it would, again, eat through our air hoses and all of our equipment and just be damaging on every front. In fact, it was hard to even breathe down there. And there would be feet, by the way. So in one example, I was taken out to a spot, I think it was near Texas. And this was after one of the oil rigs, and there's lots of, accidents out there or blown oil wells that people don't hear about. We only hear about it in the news, the small fraction that they don't get with air quotes here under control right away. But there are so many, just tens of thousands of gallons that are just dumped out there that I've seen personally for hours squirting out in the ocean and nothing's ever reported or cleaned up at any stage. And that all sits down on the bottom of the ocean. So that's it's basically all over the place. And then we would take out the job. I'd jump down on the bottom and I would basically land on the bottom of the ocean floor in about a foot, at least a foot of muck, of just the goo and oil, just residual everywhere. And that's pretty much the whole coast of the Gulf of Mexico. There's many clean patches here and there. Go ahead.
Just to be clear on it, you were in a suit that is not a scuba suit. It's a deep diving equipment.
All the above. So I was in, I've done different jobs. So some of the jobs I would have what's called a hot water suit. So a suit where there's actually hot water being just poured all over my body at the same time pouring out. So then there was a more of a plastic or PVC type suit, or sometimes a neoprene. So like a foam dive suit I would be in sometimes. And then some jobs, if they thought it was just nothing really going on there, I would, a pair of Levi's and a long sleeve shirt, just so the fish wouldn't kind of like bite you, because they'll do that, then if they see skin, so you just try and cover your skin. But because it was such warm water, it was more about covering your flesh. So rather than, they didn't, nobody really warned us about the environment down there or what we're getting into. Again, it was that as I say jokingly, fancy equipment, a mason jar or empty, believe it or not, an empty peanut butter jar was given one time to go down to the bottom of the ocean and just kind of cram it down there and get a sample. And bring it back up. And then they'd analyze it. They'd fly it off. Then it goes under a helicopter, gets flown to the beach and analyzed from there. And that was just some of the jobs. And I walked up on where the pipes are blown, just shooting out, I don't know how many thousands of gallons of oil just spewing on the bottom. And that's allowed for certain, you know, times and degrees. And I don't know all the specifics, but it's a mess down there. It really is.
We can take care of it. So don't panic out there, people. It is what it is. We can take care of it. We've just got to get our mindset. Remember, you know, that we have all potentiality in front of us. So whatever we think we need to do, we can do it. We just have to do it together. Let me ask you a question.
And be aware.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question. When you were dealing with this stuff at the bottom of the ocean, did you see any personality changes in the divers that you, I mean, you didn't seem to have any, or maybe you did. Do you attribute any energetic changes to any of you for having interfaced with this stuff?
I thought about you, and I wasn't sure whether to bring it up. Yes, but it's not a permanent thing. So I don't say anything. You touched the goo, you're infected. Did it affect and have an effect there? And yes, and was it harder to remove it energetically? Yes, but I saw it as a learning experience where I'm that guy. If you shove me, I'm gonna turn around and, you know, take care of it the other way and go twice as hard. So when I was shoved energetically or held down or restricted, which is what it does, and actually, I'll just be blunt. What it did when I was around it, in it, touching it, it limited my senses. So let's go with the intuitive abilities. My distance or perception out was more limited. I'm not sure this is even being described well, but it was like a heavy blanket, I can almost say, to where I was more restricted. It was tough. It was like being tied down in your bed with the sheets really tight and you just can't move, sort of thing, on so many levels. And I had to work through that, but I completely was able to. And then come out on the other end, aware of that and knowing, well, wait a minute, just don't ever let those sheets get tucked in so tight in this analogy, and you're okay. So it was a learning experience. I benefited from it, but absolutely got rid of any of the known energetic tie downs or limitations that I was experiencing at the time. I don't know if that answers your question or not. But
it makes me want to ask more questions.
Sure.
Okay, so what you're describing is very similar to what Harold described when he interacted with the schist from the Nazi horde of 3 tons of it. But he was more specific because when he realized he was having a really intense personality change, he was with people that were scientists, bioenergetic scientists, who realized that certain areas of his chakra system had been shut down. One being the heart, and I think the other was the throat.
But what
was dominating was the root chakra, and what was the other thing that made him very high strung, like not grounded correctly, but angry, violent. You know,
in your lower chakras.
Yeah, so it maintains the lower chakras, but takes out the stuff that makes us human, the ability to articulate thought, and the ability to love. Would that be accurate?
100% accurate. That's exactly what it does and feels like, and doesn't give you access to those upper and everything's throat chakra. Well, no, that's important. That's very important. The throat chakra and the heart chakra, but yes, it does do that. And it does put you into the anger, the short fuse example sort of thing. It does all of that, and it's everybody. It was across the board on the offshore community, we'll just call it, not just commercial deep sea divers, but just the oil rig people. So it's limiting on so, and I had never given it that much thought before until I was listening to Barbara's talk about it or Shanghai message, and it is limiting on just not just energetically, but physically, emotionally, and probably on more levels that I have no idea about. And then the Shanghai does actually help. So it's a lightening, a loosening effect, and you're freer, more ability. I think that what really fits for me is that whole being restricted, like with those blankets pulled down, and you just, because you know you can move and do stuff, and you're just limited. So it has that effect, but it can be completely removed as well. So there's no, once you've done it, you're infected and you're done. No. I mean, if you want to believe that, then yeah, you'll continue to have issues. But it's all about, you know, for me, again, if somebody's holding my coattails and slowing me down from somewhere, I'm going to turn around and, you know, free up that hand, make them let go and whatever it takes and get going where I need to go. So it's, again, it's just a little learning thing.
Well, our friend Walt, because of the discussions we've been having, he decided to ask if there was a frequency where he could essentially neutralize any black goo control mechanism, or I don't know exactly specifically, I'm not remembering, or maybe he didn't tell me what he programmed it to do. But no sooner did he do this with a device programmed to put the energy into the collective world grid, that is a frequency that negates the ability of the black goo, or whatever we want to call it, this entity of control, that, let's call it demonic or demiurge or Satan, that entity, out of everybody, every human being. And so right after he did it, I started seeing changes in people, and I could feel an energy shift. So conceivably, there is a device out there now that is clearing up all of this stuff in people who have had any kind of an interaction with it on a, let's say, a 3D way. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, but I think it's going to be something you have to choose, or at least know about or acknowledge it. I mean, it's like anything else. If somebody gets sick from a virus or bacteria or whatever, and they keep telling themselves, oh, I'm so sick. Well, and even though there's a cure out there or whatever, they're going to continue that way. So it's all relative to each their own. So I have a friend, I still have commercial diver friends who are down, still in that mindset. And I won't get into any stories for a lot of reasons, not just time, but because they're not for public, from negative things and effects from this, from suicides to deaths. I mean, just all bad stuff around that entire environment and community. And I'm talking about down there in the oil rig community / commercial divers. It's just bad. The stories on every aspect, and it's like you're stuck in the goo, like knee high, and you can't move. You feel restricted, and it affects every part of your life.
Well, see, these energy devices that he puts together, all it does is provides the energy which will change your reality. It's giving you a toolbox. Whether you choose to open the toolbox or not is up to not even you, probably your higher self. You know, so all we're doing mm-hmm. is providing toolboxes of energy that if you're somebody who's actually being controlled and plagued by the entity we'll call in the black goo, and you say, I just want to be better, I want to be who I am, well, boom, you've got the energy, and boom, it's that fast, it's gone. You know, but you have to make the, well, some people, they're so out of it that their higher self, see, you're really kind of making it a toolbox for your higher self to access. I gotta fix this 3D person, but the rules of cosmic reality state that the humans have to figure it out before it can be, yeah, da 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 da, right? And so we figure it out, we take a chance, we throw it out there, we make these devices, and then we see what happens. But I think that Shungite is beyond magic. This is the greatest story ever told, in my opinion.
No, I agree. Yeah, I'm glad to be a small part of it, like all of us are.
Yeah, get the Shungite grid. Keep building on it. Okay, so we do have the hats for the 5G because 5G. Now everybody, you know, they're okay. If you can cure cancer, and I don't want to say cure cancer, we're just stopping the mechanism that would allow the spread of cancer. But if you can do that and you can clear the water, you know, why can't you stop 5G? And I keep saying to people, this is an opportunity for us to come together as a human. You know, it's no real incredible danger because all you have to do is unplug it. You know, if a system, it's a system. Just unplug it. It's not something that is impossible to do. But if Walt, you know, just said, well, we can make something that would negate the ability 5G to work or something. You've lost the opportunity to bring people together. I used to really feel bad about thinking about what my future would have been had John Kennedy not been assassinated, because he was doing so many things that would have been beneficial for us. Instead, he dies and we go on this awful timeline. But at the same time, if he had been alive, he just would have ushered in a new kind of reality, and we wouldn't have learned from it. We wouldn't have been the ones that, you know, got involved in it. We'd just be following the leader. But because there was no leader, there was no voice out there saying, wait a minute, let's wake up here. There's a, you know, secret force out there that's controlling everything. We had to do it on our own. So when we got the Shungite team, you know, the people that follow Shungite, the people that follow cosmic reality, the people that follow all those other beings out there doing radio shows and talking. It's we're coming together in a way to change reality that is, to my way of looking at it now, very beneficial. So the assassination was in the end something that needed to be done to bring humanity together, and 5G is the same thing. It's so awful, it's so stupid that even the most, you know, brainwashed person gets it. So we do have the hats, we do have the shirts up now. You've got more totems up, more animal totems. You've got the swizzle sticks that you got up there now. And of course,
lion totem.
Lion totem. And you've got the Mason bee homes, nests, hive. So there's still a lot of things that are coming down the pike. And again, why does Derek keep coming up with these interesting different versions of Shungite? It's to give people opportunities. It's like just tools. What works for you? You know, and a lot of these options are just there because people say, you know, if we did this, right? You know, so
yeah, exactly.
So he does it, and just like Walt before him, you know, Walt still gives us amazing things, but in a different way, kind of like, you know, somebody said to me, well, Are you selling the cancer negators? No, because you only needed one. You know, so no, we're not selling these things. You just needed one. You had to stop the fundamental system that was causing cancer within people and animals. And it's just if enterology is if we understand enterology and we're correct about it as to how these devices work, it's not magic, it's just science. So anyway, we're at the end of the show. Thank you so much. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Barbara. Special show. You want to say goodnight or goodbye?
Yes, yes. Thank you, both of them, Barbara and Kevin, and Shungai. It was a fantastic show. Yeah, I learned a lot.
And thank you for giving up your pendant to that redwood tree.
Oh, yeah, there was no decision or option there. It was meant to be, so, yep, that's...
Meant yep. to be, spelled B-E-E.
B-E-E. Yep.
Everybody be safe. Cosmic Reality later to today, tonight, 6 to 8. But Jan and Shaw had a great show. And you might want to tune in and listen to Lorna and her. And up next is Mona. Be safe, everybody. We'll see you next time. You have been listening to the Shungai Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Thank you for being here. Be safe.